precio, costo político, por tratar de renegociar el Tratado de Libre Comercio, y lo lamentablemente es que el chantaje podría funcionar, porque la clase política mexicana es tan débil que es capaz de conceder, dado el hecho que el peso está ahorita en picada. Mientras hablaba Trump, el peso seguía cayendo. Aunque sonaba como un bufón el señor Trump, en realidad lo que da más lástima es que la clase política mexicana también son igual de bufones y son capaces de entregarle al señor Trump cualquier cosa por salvar su posición, su postura, su privilegio.
Dado de que en México ahorita, por cuestiones de las reformas que se están peleando ahorita, particularmente la energética y la educativa, la gente está en pie de lucha, eso pudiera significar una intensificación de la lucha y probablemente un incremento de la represión, ¿no?
Yo creo que sí, y creo que en particular si el señor Trump trata de tocar las remesas, que son el pilar fundamental de la economía mexicana, podría profundizar la crisis social que enfrenta México ahora y estar ante una crisis política, social, económica, como nunca ha visto anteriormente el PRI.
Una persona de apellido Carmona, escuché la parte final, siendo entrevistado por Telesur desde México, el señor Carmona decía de que cuando los estadounidenses, los gobernantes de Estados Unidos, toman esa actitud, esa posición vociferante, amenazante y casi grosera hacia México y los mexicanos, usualmente pasan a otro nivel. Me imagino que está hablando de algún tipo de injerencia más directa, sino una invasión. ¿Usted qué piensa?
Bueno, la injerencia directa ya existe. México, con el Plan México, abrió sus puertas al aparato de inteligencia norteamericano, abrió sus fuerzas militares al aparato de militar norteamericano, y con el Tratado de Libre Comercio abrió su economía a Estados Unidos. O sea, la injerencia ya existe. El hecho de que el peso siga en picada al dólar implica que la economía mexicana no tiene soberanía propia, está ligada simplemente a la americana, a la norteamericana, y por lo tanto las repercusiones no se dejaron sentir. El problema fundamental es que la clase política mexicana y económica no tiene alternativa al Tratado de Libre Comercio, no tiene propuesta, no mira hacia América Latina, y entonces se encuentran en posición más débil y por lo tanto más fácil de manipular.
O sea que una apelación al apoyo popular para defender la autonomía, la soberanía mexicana, ni siquiera está en el horizonte, y si partiera de algún centro de poder de la clase política mexicana, probablemente no recibiría ninguna ayuda, ¿no?
Yo dudo que recibiría ayuda, porque en realidad personas como Vicente Fox, Felipe Calderón e incluso Peña Nieto, el presidente actual, han perdido toda legitimidad, no tienen base para poder defender la soberanía mexicana. Si viene un llamado por soberanía, vendrá del propio pueblo mexicano. Lo más interesante de las protestas en México en este momento es la ausencia de los partidos políticos. O sea, la población no simpatiza y no confía en los partidos políticos. Por lo tanto, recordemos que el Pacto por México fue firmado por tanto el PRI, el PAN como el PRD. Por lo tanto, hay la desconfianza total de los líderes políticos, de los partidos políticos.
Seguramente una amenaza de una deportación de otros 4 o 5 millones sería suficiente para que el gobierno de México que entienda que eso se traduciría en una reducción dramática de ingresos, ¿no?
Dramática y con un impacto de que llevaría a México a una crisis económica. De nuevo encontramos otra forma de hacer chantaje a México con la amenaza de la deportación, sin pensar la deslocación que ocurriría en la economía norteamericana con una deportación de lo que es esencialmente es la mano de obra en este país, tanto a nivel industrial, agricultor, servicios, hoteles, en todos los sectores. La clase trabajadora mexicana, latinoamericana, centroamericana, son la vértebra fundamental de la clase obrera de este país.
Eso sugiere de que el grupo que está detrás de Donald Trump a nivel doméstico ya están pensando en obligar a los afroamericanos y a los blancos pobres a reemplazar a los indocumentados, ¿no?
Yo creo que lo que implica es que están dispuestos a jugar un juego de amenaza con el fin de lograr eliminar lo que queda de los sindicatos, eliminar la resistencia laboral, abrir los espacios para el capital, y sin duda eso implicaría también el continuo hostigamiento de la clase obrera bajo el pretexto de un populismo falso cómo se ha manipulado en el contexto nacionalista de que van a regresar las empresas, de que va a incrementar el trabajo, cuando en realidad sabemos muy bien que eso no va a suceder.
En otro orden de cosas, el presidente electo Trump ya insinuó de que él estaría dispuesto a hacer cambios orgánicos, estructurales dentro de los servicios de inteligencia, y de repente hoy aparece un reporte cuestionable sobre fotos o videos de Donald Trump en Rusia con unas prostitutas haciendo quién sabe qué cosas, sugiriendo de que Donald Trump está en una posición débil que lo hace susceptible al chantaje de Rusia y por tanto debería renunciar y el vicepresidente actual tomar las riendas del país. ¿Qué tan lejos está eso de la verdad?
Yo creo que estamos un poco lejos todavía. Sin duda hay un esfuerzo por tratar de herir a Trump. No es claro de dónde viene el origen de este esfuerzo. Podría venir de los propios cuerpos de seguridad que están utilizando la arma rusa para tratar de debilitar al señor Trump llegando al poder. Hemos visto quiénes están atrás de esto, este señor John McCain y el Lindsey Graham de Carolina del Sur. O sea, dos republicanos también están involucrados en esto. Podría haber también la influencia del FBI y de otras agencias de seguridad que también quieren resaltar de nuevo la guerra fría anti-Rusia en este contexto contra el señor Trump. Pero obviamente hay grupos, sectores organizados que están involucrados en difundir esta información, en difundir estos reportes que todavía no tenemos confirmación de su origen, pero no obstante buscan, y podrían ser también el propio aparato del Estado que quiere en cierta forma controlar al señor Trump en sus políticas más extremas. O sea, hay muchas fuentes posibles en el proceso en que estamos desarrollando.
Finalmente, señor Tinken Salas, al centro, o diríamos al frente, liderando la campaña contra Trump, están John McCain y el señor Clapper, director de Inteligencia Nacional, los mismos dos personajes que fueron figuras centrales en organizar las mentiras y crear las condiciones para la invasión de Irak. ¿Qué podemos esperar ahora?
Yo creo que lo que estamos viendo es un esfuerzo por parte del aparato de inteligencia de proteger sus intereses, de proteger su influencia y de cierta forma influir en lo que podría ser, o sea, un Trump débil estaría en peor condiciones para poder alterar el sistema de inteligencia, lo cual permitiría que estos grupos protegen y sigan protegiendo sus intereses propios, que son tantos políticos como económicos. Creo que eso es lo que está fundamentalmente atrás de estas divulgaciones.
Era Miguel Tinker Salas, profesor de Historia Latinoamericana en el Colegio de Pomona, California.
Estás escuchando el Informativo Pacífica.
Te invitamos a que te unas a nuestras redes sociales por Twitter en info-pacífica o por Facebook bajo el nombre de nuestro productor Fernando Velázquez e Informativo Pacífica. Escucha el noticiero cada día de lunes a viernes en Pueblos Sin Fronteras wordpress.com.
En otras noticias de México, las movilizaciones contra el aumento del precio de los combustibles se han hecho visibles en varias regiones del país. Este manifestante, que dijo llamarse Marco Antonio, habló ante el micrófono de Norma Martínez en la Ciudad de México.
Soy del Estado de México, de Cuautitlán Izcalli. Mira, no es tanto el gasolinazo, porque hasta eso lo entiendo, el gasolinazo, entiendo que tratan de hacerlo a un nivel mundial, aunque el error está en que tampoco el sueldo lo ponen a nivel mundial. Hay países donde cuesta 35 la gasolina, los sueldos son de 300 pesos, no de 80. Pero también la inseguridad, la burla con la que ya tratan al pueblo, el descaro. Creo que ya es tiempo de que le quitemos el poder al gobierno y que entiendan que ellos trabajan para nosotros. Y si no son aptos para el trabajo que están haciendo, los quitamos y metemos a nuestra gente. Me preguntaban que si yo pensaba en algo así de política. Yo no pienso en eso porque soy una persona con la preparatoria trunca, no soy una persona culta. Yo creo que lo mejor para México es que en economía pongas al mejor economista de México. En turismo pongas al mejor licenciado en turismo. Esa es la solución. Y lo que trato de hacer yo es darles ese espacio para que puedan entrar ellos. Nada más. Mira, inicialmente en el video de mi vida a cambio de tu renuncia, mi idea era ponerme en el asta bandera. Cuando llegué con lo de la pista de patinaje no pude ponerme ahí, estaba en la parte de seguridad, no pensaba brincarme para no tener problemas con ellos. Ahorita la gente me ha dicho que gracias. Me ha dicho la gente que si me pongo ahí y llego a raspar un poquito el asta, me van a arrestar. Entonces, ahorita ya la tengo mejor como simbólica. Sigo poniéndome las personas como una.
Ya está comprada.
¿Sí?
La Suprema Corte de Justicia acaba de recibir una...
Me dedico a fabricar vestidos de fiesta para niñas, junto con mi hermano. De hecho, ahorita es el que está cuidando el... Él está trabajando en lo que estoy yo de vacaciones.
Todo el mundo lo sabe.
¿Cuánto tiempo piensas estar aquí?
Mira, pienso estar aquí hasta que tenga alguna respuesta o hasta que mi cuerpo aguante.
Todos los medios, todos los pinches medios.
La renuncia de Enrique Peña Nieto y de todo su gabinete.
Para llevar a Peña Nieto.
Hasta que venga él y me quite las cadenas él mismo, es lo que digo en el video, y las llaves las tengo aquí en en mi pecho. Sí, aquí
la Suprema Corte de Justicia.
¿Qué crees? Que ayer nada más me quedé con esta cobija. Es la primera vez que duermo en la calle. Es horrible. Desde que me dolían los huesos no podía dormir. Peor que el hambre fue el frío. Por eso muchas personas me preguntan que quién me pueden apoyar. Les digo que yo estoy muy bien, no necesito nada. Pero sí veo muchos indigentes que no tienen cobija. Yo llevo 2 días de ayuno. Uno me dijo que le llevaba 33, imagínate. O sea, y está acostumbrado, me dijo, pues, te paso un tip, si tienes hambre no pienses en comida y camina. O sea, imagínate con qué realidad viven ellos y nosotros podemos hacer algo. Empecemos a crear esa conciencia de proteger a los que menos tienen. No de decirlo, sino hacerlo, de verdad. Ayúdenme en eso.
Así concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de todos los medios y personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Toshi y la Norma Martínez, se despide su amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Good evening, my friends, afternoon and day. This is our duck here, asking you to help us find a new studio location, $500 to the one that can provide. If you know such a spot, it needs, a bathroom, electricity, ability to connect internet and telephone. Dry would be nice. We all thank you in advance for your support of this truly community-operated pirate radio station. 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. Send us an email with your knowledge, frsc@freakradio.org. We thank you in advance.
This is Ward Churchill saying, get yourself a mind transplant. Listen to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101 FM.
I was down to Nate's where we always ate for ham and cheese on rye. But it's got a new name, Peak of the Range. It's a high concept design. It's full of rocks, it's a mountaintop, and clouds go rolling by. Got alpine cuisine, I saw limousines, and it's full of guys and eyes. Just look and you can see it. You can watch the city die. Today we got new bosses, it's enough to make you cry. Where once there was a mural, there's an ad designer hail. The city that I knew was gone, the city is for sale. Apartments on the condos, they burn down cheap hotels. Yuppies take the south side, and the city goes to hell. Yuppies take the south side, and the city goes to hell. Yuppies take the south side.
Yeah, welcome to Bathroom Spears Broadsides, an unusual beginning, but that's what we're starting with today. You're tuned to the stream of free radio at freakradio.org. We still have no computer, no transmitter site, so we are on the stream, but not on the air, which is a pity, and hopefully we will be getting back on the air in about 3 or 4 weeks, because we may have found a spot. But if you have suggestions as to where we might put up our transmitter antenna, like the second story of a house or a tree in a yard, any place, preferably actually on the east side, out toward Live Oak, but anywhere in Santa Cruz is a possibility. Give a call to my phone number, 423-4833, and I'll pass it on to the collective. That's 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, which is also a line for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is a group that I work with and write about and sign on to and so forth. In the studio with me this evening, I have a special guest, Rebecca, also known as Bertha G. Hey, Rebecca, say hello.
Hello.
Say hello again.
Hello.
Okay, let's see if we got you there. So, and for a third time, say hello.
Hello.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. Try to adjust that mic. Now, Rebecca, I ran into you a few days ago, and, you know, you talked about your life, part of your life, which had to do with being outside, or at least having to survive in a vehicle, which is housing for a number of people in Santa Cruz.
Yes.
And you are out of that at the present time, or you're still struggling? What's happening with that?
No, I'm out of the car at the present time, yes, but it is a temporary situation, and not sure when I will actually, or how much longer I'll actually have a place to be.
Let's try this. Got to have iron hands to deal with these microphones. Sorry for the delay, folks. Let's see now. So you are, how long were you in a vehicle?
Well, in the past 3 years, I've been in my vehicle five different times.
Wow.
And the fifth time was the longest period of time. It was 8 months.
And this was all in Santa Cruz or elsewhere?
Yes.
What prompted these vehicular excursions?
Well,
if you wish to.
Yeah, I've been in Santa Cruz for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I came up here after college in 1998 and became like one of the first Pilates instructors in the area back then.
And explain for all us somewhat less familiar folks what a Pilates instructor is.
It is an instructor of a technique called Pilates, spelled P-I-L-A-T-E-S. That was the name of the man who developed it and invented it, basically all the exercises and the techniques behind it, back in World War I with the bedridden soldiers and whatnot. I became certified to teach it to other people.
What is it exactly?
It's a fitness technique.
So it's for health and improving your strength.
It's yes, exactly. I've been pushed out of Santa Cruz a couple of times over the past 20 years. There was a time, the very first time that it happened, there was about 10 of my friends that were also being evicted from their apartments so that the rents could be raised and rented to richer people.
Has this been a kind of a pattern as to why on each of these five occasions you found yourself homeless have been a raising of the rents?
No, this particular time in the past 3 years was not because of the rents were already so raised. The biggest problem was that the jobs that I was having at the time, which I did enjoy as a direct support professional and a caregiver, they only pay minimum wage. And honestly, 3 years ago, when I started, I was only making $8.25 an hour. And then finally, the minimum wage went up to $10 an hour. And so since then, over the past year, I've definitely been looking for jobs that are even more than $13 an hour, because I have to work an incredible amount of overtime in order to still make any kind of significant money to be able to put a deposit down on a place to live.
Well, I think you mentioned you did some house cleaning work as well recently that may have tired you out today, right?
Yes, that is my recent current job, is house cleaning.
What does that pay?
It's starting at $15 an hour.
And what does that take out of you, or what satisfaction, if maybe, I wouldn't know if I'd use that word, but does it give any satisfaction to you, or is it simply, the need to make the rent?
It is, number one, the need to make the rent, because it would not be at all what I would, I was a Pilates instructor for years and years, and I went through some certain situations that affected my health, my blood pressure, and I been taking off the last 3 years from putting any effort into gaining any Pilates clientele, and trying to heal myself and get my blood pressure down. So
now, is that a big thing in Santa Cruz? Is Pilates something that a number of people are looking for instruction in?
Well, I'm not 100% sure, because I haven't really put much time into finding out. When I first started 20 years ago, I put a couple flyers up, and in a month, I had a full schedule working out of my home. And things are much different now. It's gone through this big boom, and, there's Pilates studios almost on every corner, and I was away for a little while. It was one of those times I got pushed away and tried to find a home and a job elsewhere, because Santa Cruz was too expensive. It ended up 6.5 years later, I came back. Because even though places rent might be a little less expensive elsewhere, at the time that this happened too, it was like 2007, I think, when almost everybody's home was going into foreclosure, and there were no jobs. There was like one job opening with 1,000 applicants, and so ended up all the way in Indianapolis, Indiana, before I finally made it back to Santa Cruz, and that was 5 years ago. And then there was, unfortunately, something that the only thing I will say about it is there was a breakup. And that's when I ended up going it alone, and I found out that my high blood pressure was really bad, and I ended up settling for a minimum wage paying job that, I still enjoyed, it's kind of down my alley, caregiving and whatnot, but it turns out it's not at all. I don't want to do it for the rest of my life, is mm-hmm. what I'm trying to say. So mm-hmm. I made the jump over into house cleaning, and it's very much more satisfactory because I get to work by myself. And the biggest problem is, even though it's $15 an hour, my hours are very little. But I'm also working on something else as well that I don't necessarily want to talk about.
No problem. Mm-hmm. We will not dig too deep here.
Yeah.
But let's talk about, the main reason I invited you here has to do with, living in a vehicle and
right.
the difficulties of doing that, or the joys of doing that. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess the joy is you don't have...
absolutely no joy in it.
At least you don't have a landlord. I guess that's the only joy I can think of. But there's no joy. Tell us about the lack of joy.
I think, in my case, probably a little bit different than most because I had to do it, the last 3 years all by myself. Like, I had nobody. I really didn't even have any friends calling me or anything. So I thank goodness for my dog. And there were other things where I was being kind of harassed by whomever. It doesn't even matter. But it made things more difficult to stay in my car because... And then I started getting paranoid that I was being followed, which I might have been being followed. I don't know. Just going from place to place, I was very thankful all the time that I had my car, of course.
Now you were in your car, you were in a car, 10 or 15 years ago, as well as a few years ago, right?
No. So this is the first time ever that I have not.
And that was Rebecca from last week. Unfortunately, we're starting about 15 minutes late due to incredible parking problems. So do stay with us for a live and original edition of the stream of Free Radio, which will be giving you Bathrob Spears Broadsides the 12th today of 2017, January.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of bread lines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
And again, a belated welcome. We can stop the music. There we go. To Bathrob Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert, and I'll be with you for the next hour and a half, a little bit more, hour and three quarters. You're listening live if you're listening to me on Thursday, the 12th of January, so feel free to call in if you have any thoughts, if you have any comments, if you have any reactions to what you're hearing, or you think you can add to the show. The number here is 427-3772, and we are at the Stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz, still looking for a studio site because our studio will have to be vacated within about a month and a half, and we will then be like some other folks who are happening out there tonight, or trying to live out there tonight, cold and homeless. I guess you might say Santa Cruz is our home, but we won't have a place to broadcast from, just as we don't have a transmitter site at the moment, though we're hoping that that will improve in the next 2 weeks. But any new prospects that you have for us for either a broadcasting area, which is a 10 by 10 indoor space with access to a bathroom and electricity, which we'd be happy to rent at a reasonable rate, or an outdoor space, we could actually broadcast from an outdoor space too. We'd set up our own shed. We still need access to power and some kind of bathroom facility or access. But we also need a transmitter site, which would be some place where we could stick up a nice high antenna. I think our antenna goes up 30 feet. We put it on the side of a house and a tree. We would float it from a passing dirigible, but it doesn't seem feasible at this time. But we are looking for a spot. So if you have any ideas, call in to, it's my off-air number is 423-4833. I'm not the official number, but I'll let people know. Or you can go directly to the website that you're probably listening to now, the freakradio.org website, which also, as those of you who are listening probably have noticed, has our schedule updated. Thank you very much, all you freaker people. And it's also got some audio archives, and it's also got some instructions on how to become a Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcaster or streamer in our situation right now, if that's what you'd like to do. So, what have I got for you today? I'm a little bit kind of scrambling today. It's not only been hard to find a place to park, but it's also a lot of the interviews that I'd planned for the last few shows have been, unfortunately, they've disappeared along with my recording device, so I'm going to have to say farewell to those. I have picked up a few in the last couple of days, and I've also noticed a few stories that I want to mention. One of them has to do with a law, which kind of, the story began about a year ago. Governor Brown signed a law barring grand juries in police deadly force cases. And interestingly enough, when I first read about this issue recently, a couple days ago, which when the court overturned that law, I thought, you know, optimistically, oh, well, now grand juries can hear police deadly force cases again. Isn't that wonderful? You know, when the cops shoot somebody and there's the only internal investigation says, hey, the police officer did a fine thing, or he's okay, or it was a good shoot, if you will. But there's no independent agency that looks at it. Ah, if a grand jury can look at it, isn't that wonderful? Well, grand juries, as I might have remembered from reading various accounts, and I don't think I've ever talked to anyone who's been before a grand jury, or at least not about that subject. But what I've read is grand juries are easily led around by prosecutors. And so if the prosecution is close to the police department and the police department wants its officers to be exonerated in order to maintain public trust, at least with the broader white or majority community, where it's able to point anybody the police shoot as some kind of a violent, dangerous, drug-using, crazy criminal, and the officer as a upholder of the law and a defender of public safety, regardless of the actual facts of the situation, then they'll do it, and they'll encourage the prosecution to do so. And the prosecution here in Santa Cruz, DA Jeff Roselle, just like his predecessors, requires the assistance of the police in making cases. And so I think he has, unfortunately, or, well, just necessarily, he is required to maintain a good relationship with the police department, and that can mean giving them undue influence. And if that's the case, then simply having a grand jury investigate something isn't going to necessarily help reveal the truth of the situation or get anybody any closer to what passes for justice in this legal system and this society. So a law was passed a year ago, more than a year ago, and it was done in the wake of the exonerations of the killers in Missouri and in New York. And that, I'll read a little bit about that story. The police killers, the police officers who killed civilians. And let's hear a little bit about that here. Senator Holly Mitchell and Assemblyman Bill Quirk, both Democrats, discuss her measure that would end the use of grand jury proceedings to investigate police shootings. And actually, before I read that, the law was tossed out by an appellate court, and apparently that was upheld more recently this year, a year later. But here's the story. Governor Jerry Brown signed into law a year ago a measure that prohibits secret grand juries to weigh in on evidences involving excessive or deadly force by law enforcement, and another affirming the public's right to take audio or video recordings of police officers, and I'll be talking more about that. Both measures were part of a spate of proposals introduced by lawmakers earlier in 2015 on police accountability. Some of the more controversial bills dealing with body-worn cameras or reporting on use of force incidents have stalled in the legislature. And I think they may still have stalled this last year, 2016 as well. But I don't have that information directly in hand. Senator Holly Mitchell, Democrat of L.A., offered the grand jury's measure in response to high-profile incidents in Ferguson, Missouri, and New York City, where grand juries declined to indict police officers for the deaths of Michael Brown in Ferguson and Eric Garner, in respectively, in New York. You remember, I'm choking, it was Eric Garner. Mitchell said her bill, SB 227, would help make judicial proceedings more transparent and accountable. Los Angeles and Santa Clara counties already have opted not to use grand juries when an officer's actions may have caused someone's death. One doesn't have to be a lawyer to understand why SB 227 makes sense, Mitchell said in a statement. The use of the grand jury process and the failure to indict, as occurred in Ferguson and other communities of color, has fostered an atmosphere of suspicion that threatens to compromise our justice system. I like the way that it's always sort of so gently phrased. Our real objective is to maintain the credibility of our police force rather than to provide justice to those that they have killed, which really, to me, is the issue. If the police department wants to maintain credibility, then that's its responsibility. It's not our responsibility to run around buffing them up and claiming that measures that are really concerned with supposedly dealing with injustice are really dealing with public trust in the police department. It's a way of avoiding, I guess, police criticism, or trying to avoid it, but that, of course, doesn't usually happen anyway, because, for instance, this measure to essentially ban grand juries from considering lethal police shootings was opposed by law enforcement groups, including the California Association of District Attorneys, which argued the grand jury system was a useful prosecutorial tool. Brown also approved the right to record bill by Senator Ricardo Lara, which makes it clear that it is legal for a person to record the actions of a police officer if that officer is in a public place, or if the person making the recording has a right to be in that place. With the stroke of a pen, Governor Brown reinforces our First Amendment rights and ensures transparency, accountability, and justice for all Americans. I don't know about that. Lara said in a statement, at a time when cell phone and video footage is helping steer important national civil rights conversations and protests and finally firings of corrupt cops, passage of the Right to Record Act sets an example for the rest of the nation to follow. Again, as I said, I'll be talking about the Right to Record Act in a bit, but first talking about the grand jury ban and the fact that it was recently thrown out. So there was an immediate challenge to the law, apparently, the aspect of the law that talked about tossing out, not allowing prosecutors to duck their responsibilities and to in secret closed session exonerate police officers through grand jury proceedings. The California Appeals Court upheld this decision, throwing it out. It tossed out a law that banned grand juries, this was 2 days ago, no, yesterday, on the 11th, from determining whether police officers involved in fatal shootings should face criminal charges. The 2015 law sought more transparency in shooting investigations by shifting charging decisions from closed-door grand juries to prosecutors. Although there's a little bit of a contradiction there, too. If the prosecutors are all, you know, gung-ho to dump these cases in grand juries and exonerate the cops, would it be that much better to put them in the hands of prosecutors who don't seem to be doing too well, as witness the case of the man who was essentially first assaulted and then bounced to death in a police van in St. Louis recently. All of them exonerated, every single officer, or if not exonerated, went into a hung jury, which the prosecution then declined to re-prosecute. The Third District Court of Appeals ruled Tuesday that lawmakers can't restrict grand juries' constitutional authority to issue criminal indictments. To allow the legislature to restrict this constitutional role in part would be to concede the power to restrict it in its entirety, Justice M. Kathleen Butts said in the ruling. Butts is butting in, it sounds like. California legislature adopted the law after grand juries in New York and Missouri declined to indict officers who fatally shot unarmed black suspects, decisions that led to nationwide protests and unrest. Supporters of the law said the secret nature of grand jury decisions can create the impression that the process is unfair and erode trust in law enforcement, particularly when the outcome seems to conflict with witnesses or cell phone video. The law left the decision to file charges in deadly police forces cases to prosecutors who have been accused of using grand juries to avoid political fallout from their charging decisions. The office of the state senator who wrote the law, Holly Mitchell, Democrat of Los Angeles, did not immediately have comment. The appeals court said the legislature could seek a constitutional amendment banning court grand juries from investigating deadly police force cases, which is harder to do than pass a law, or revise the procedural rules that make those grand jury investigations secret. I guess the point here is maybe that would influence prosecutors to be less buddy-buddy with the police and their please exonerate Mr. Officer Man who happened to shoot a couple of unarmed black people the other day. I'm not sure why the appeals court would even mention that. But their cover for this is that it's unconstitutional to restrict the power of grand juries to look at anything. And if you restrict their power to look at something, and it's in the state constitution that you can't do that, and I'm not sure because I haven't read the state constitution on that issue, then the grand jury can be restricted in any way that the legislature decides, which would mean it would limit the power of the grand jury, which might be a good thing, actually, or I would have to say probably is, unless you have grand juries investigating real crimes, let's say like the Trump White House or the Clinton election campaign, you know, the people who are spending the whole of the country's money, arming it to the teeth, and then getting all the attention from the whorish media every day by day. But not this media, hopefully, here, not too much, at least not my show. Prosecutors who challenged the law said grand juries gave them power to force witnesses to testify and could involve more thorough investigations. Grand juries are composed of community members who weigh evidence presented by prosecutors behind closed doors. It's also true that witnesses before grand juries don't have the kind of immunity that they can't stand on the Fifth Amendment in the same way that people can in before what's called petite juries or in ordinary criminal prosecutions. And I'm not entirely sure of the whole background of that, but it's why people go to jail when they're, let's say, a reporter is called before a grand jury to demand to know her or his sources for a story, as has happened in a number of cases in the last few years. And the reporter says, I can't tell you that, or I wouldn't be able to write my stories. The sources wouldn't talk, particularly given Obama's attack on whistleblowers and Trump's likely continuation of that attack. But so then the grand jury then puts the reporter in jail until the he or she says, okay, I give up, let me out. I'll tell you what you want to know, even though we supposedly have a Fifth Amendment. The Fifth Amendment, of course, doesn't... it protects your right not to incriminate yourself, but I guess for reporters it doesn't guarantee their secrecy or their right to remain privileged in their sources, although I believe that some recent legislation was passed in the last decade or so around that, but don't have that information with me. Anyway, instead of banning the use of grand juries and deadly police forces, transcripts of their investigations should be made public, said Mark Zahner, CEO of the California DA's Association, which opposed the law. He said that that could make the process even more transparent than an investigation by a prosecutor. Well, yeah, but it also, if the only testimony that a district attorney seeks, the only questions he asks essentially exonerate the officer or don't uncover the evidence that might find the officer liable for trial, then it doesn't really matter if you have a transcript of it or not. I suppose it makes it clearer that that's what he is doing. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It sounds like the district attorney is trying to preserve its sweet deals with the police department and not be able to essentially run to a grand jury to exonerate cops if they want to. Our position, says the DA guy, was always that there is no backroom sneaky skullduggery going on in these things, of course. I mean, how could that be? These rulings came in the case of a fatal June 2010 shooting by South Lake Tahoe police. El Dorado County District Attorney Viren Pearson challenged the law by seeking a grand jury investigation of the shooting. This is a series of stories from the Associated Press, essentially about a court decision 2 days ago, or that was talked about 2 days ago, that said the law passed to stop the prosecutors from sending cases to grand juries and requiring them to themselves make charging decisions of the police department was unconstitutional. But again, what I noticed when I was researching this or reading it right before the show was that there's a second bill, which I find of even more interest to me, because I don't use or I'm not involved much with grand juries, and I haven't heard of them being impaneled much in this area. Well, because I go after animal rights advocates, and that has happened, and some reporters, I suppose. I haven't been involved with them. But I have been I've been prosecuted by the local district attorney on a number of occasions, and the police department has arrested me on numerous occasions, sometimes at the behest of the city council, because they don't like such things as my recording, you know, audio recording their meetings. And I've talked about that one at length in past shows, but there was a bill, the Right to Record bill, SB 411, apparently passed at the same time as this other bill a year ago, which has not yet, as far as I know, been touched by the courts, although maybe I haven't heard about it. I certainly hope it hasn't been. It makes it clear that it's legal for a person to record the actions of a police officer, according to this story, if that officer is in a public place or if the person making the recording has a right to be in that place. So, I would suspect, though I am not sure, that this would extend to recording anyone in a public place where there's no expectation of privacy. That's always been my understanding of the state law and of one's constitutional right to do that. It becomes particularly important when you're dealing with government officials of any kind, whether they're police officers or city council members or bureaucrats who are in positions that where they're supposed to follow certain procedures and maybe choosing not to, or maybe you just want to document that they are following them, but that their higher-ups are then not doing what they should do. This is true, for example, for me, has been true in the past with public records acts, which I'll be talking about later in the show and have talked about in past shows. But there is a particular history I have with the Santa Cruz city government. It's involved their failure to address civil rights issues and survival issues for houseless people, unhoused people outside at all times of the year, but particularly in the winter, and the tendency of the police to be essentially a merchant or right-wing residential enforcement squad or thug patrol that forces homeless people to vacate public spaces where they should be allowed to remain because certain other people feel uncomfortable having them there. And this is covered up with a lot of verbiage about public safety or aesthetic clutter or sidewalk crowding, trip and fall hazard. They've got a dozen excuses for all this stuff. But what it really amounts to is, we don't want you fucking ugly people around here. You poor people make it uncomfortable for us. And indeed, there are circumstances that do develop when you have one class that runs around shopping or soliciting shoppers or engaging in their usual residential activities. It wants to ban anybody else in the area from being around for very long because they are nervous about their presence. You know, they might be a child molester, a criminal, a drug user, all these things which are used. And was a mass of such testimony was presented in the measures introduced by Rochelle Narayan, a city council clown, who proposed a measure to ban all RVs at night in the city. Actually, she wanted to ban them day and night, but then she went for night, then she went for a more limited part of the night, and finally she was told by the Coastal Commission, no, back to the drawing board. You got to prove that there's some real problem that requires banning them at all, at least from the coastal zone. And the same thing seems to have happened, although it's not entirely clear, in the county, because there haven't been, according to activist Julie Scholl of Santa Cruz Full Timers, and that's where you'll find her Facebook page, any tickets recently against people for parking their vehicles. There have been citations, of course, and there are continuing to be citations under the sleeping ban, which means it's illegal to sleep or, if you will, camp, as they like to prettify the situation. It's illegal, in other words, to survive and doing normal human activity if you're poor and homeless in Santa Cruz, or that we're going to make it very difficult for you. Hide out or get out or face citations and tickets. And so I originally, with a bunch of other people, began to oppose this. I was part of the original forming of a group called HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, 2.5 decades ago, back in 1989 or thereabouts, maybe even 1988 under an earlier name. And a part of what we did was we pressured city council through testimony, through petitions, through written letters to the paper, all kinds of things, which we used all manner of reasonable arguments. And, of course, we were ignored. Not reasonably, but that has very little to do with reason, as folks who get into this situation tend to find out fairly quickly. And some folks never find that out, but continue to believe that if only we were a little more polite, that maybe, it would have been only if we talked to the right people, and that sort of thing. That's not been my experience, and I think it's delusional to believe that. It's comforting, but it's delusional to believe that. And it's what people in power would have you believe. Anyway, some of what I've done involves a lot of recording because I play and comment on the behavior of city council on this radio show, which I've done since 1995. That's actually the same year the station began here in Santa Cruz, Free Radio Santa Cruz began. And in order to do that, and it hasn't usually been an issue, I'll stick my tape recorder up at the near the microphone of the city council during every 2 weeks when it comes on, or I'll bring it into the meetings that occasionally I've gone to where city council members are supposedly taking testimony or discussing issues that concern poor people or street performers or street people, which are the issues that really interest me, or police abuse, another issue, since a lot of the police abuse tends to fall on the heads of those who are the most vulnerable, the poorest, the least likely to be able to defend themselves, those who haven't got access to attorneys and so forth. Well, in 2001, after the city, including the government of now council member Christopher Crone, who's now in power again, he wasn't the mayor, but he was one of the three city council members elected who, with then-Mayor Catherine Byers, constituted a clear majority of the Santa Cruz City Council, had promised to, for one thing, end the sleeping ban, the law that makes it illegal in Santa Cruz for people to fall asleep, that's actually the wording of the law, after 11 o'clock at night, outside, in a vehicle, in any structure that's not a house or a hotel. That is, say, not intended for human habitation. That could be a movie theater, it could be a restaurant, it could be a vacant building that's, say, a warehouse, which is not intended for human habitation. In fact, in a way, it makes the whole church program illegal, because churches are not intended for human habitation, and therefore they are illegal under the sleeping ban. And in some cases, very rarely, police have tried to enforce that, and they actually tried to enforce it at the Red Church back in 1988 when Pastor Jones was pastor there, and he, to some extent, the current management used to do, I don't think they're doing it so much anymore, the current management used to allow, well, as Jones used to allow, people to sleep outside the Red Church. They had no other place to go. And the police would run and come around and give them all citations, which they couldn't pay, and harass them. In those days, the citations led to warrants. Now they simply lead to increased fines. If you get three of them, then you can be given jailing tickets, and things get more serious. But, you know, it's a process that's kind of inevitable if you're outside, and it's clearly at the whim of the police officers and the prosecutors. Power is in their hands as to what they're going to do. Anyway, the churches, the Red Church, when they noticed, this was back in 88, that police officers were giving citations, would allow, when the police came, all the people sleeping outside to come running into the church. And then they would sort of shield them from the police activity. So what the police ended up doing after this happened for two successive nights, this was the story I was told, they pounded on the door of the church and they told Pastor Jones, whoever was running thing then, that they would then ticket the church, and it would come into the church and start ticketing people unless they threw the people out of the church. I think the church eventually relented and abandoned its religious mission for a more commercial police state kind of mission, you know, where they went along with the prevailing, if thou dost not have money, thou shalt not be allowed to sleep after 11 o'clock at night in Santa Cruz. So it's a lot of nasty stuff has been going on and continues to get worse for homeless people, in spite of token programs like the Association of Faith Communities Winter Shelter. It's a real program for about 110 people, but for the other 1,000 to 3,000 people in the county, it is completely irrelevant. And in terms of finding out what the ticketing situation is, the police department is refusing to release that information. Still, I got another response today from Barbara Bush. Actually, I'll talk more about that in a bit, perhaps. But in any case, the reason I'm giving this long story is to talk about this recording decision that the courts, the legislature passed, giving you clarifying you have a right to record the police. They say turn off the recorder. You say no, officer, I'd prefer not to. How can I? Am I free to go? Or can you please get back to your job and leave me alone? I'm just standing here, you know. And what happened with us was we were threatened because we brought homeless people in to talk to city officials to ask them why they weren't keeping their promises. In this case, it was a Green Party mayor, the first in Santa Cruz history, Tim Fitzmaurice. You know, there's always this sort of legend, this mythology that the Greens are this sort of salvational party that only once they get in power, when Jill Stein will resolve everything. I actually like Jill Stein's programs much more than I do any of the Democrats or the Republicans' policies. But in my experience with the Green Party politicians locally is they're like politicians generally. They, once they get in power, power becomes the issue, maintaining power. And the substance of why they got into power tends to evaporate or get lost in the structures of power and in the hierarchy of power and in the need to maintain power. So it was that Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice, who you'll still find around town a bit, a nice guy, he's a poet, he was a lecturer at UCSC. I have nothing against him personally. I said a lot of negative things about his behaviors and will continue to do so insofar as we're talking about his past record. But he actually got, I want to say he got better on the city council, but the reality is the city council got worse. And he just looked better by contrast, unfortunately. But in contrast to others on the city council, he was probably one of the least worst of the city council when he finally left. He stayed on for another term. He was elected in 1998, and then he served all the way to 2006, I believe. And he along with Rotkin and Matthews, gave us the nasty anti-homeless ordinances, and he essentially sold out his constituents in terms of at least some of us. He certainly sold out, I guess, those on the West Side who were pouring stories of messy, evil, nasty homeless into his ear or whatever. He didn't sell out. He fulfilled their expectations, or perhaps he listened to them anyway. But we, as I said, we sent people in to talk to Fitzmaurice and the council, essentially by not having to wait every 2 weeks and get 2 minutes at the mic, or 3 minutes it was in those days. But we would go into the offices and sit down and let them know, leave a note and say, we're waiting to talk to Councilmember such and such, Mayor Fitzmaurice, Councilmember Christopher Crone, because we want there to be a winter, we want shelter to be either provided for people over the winter, which didn't look likely, or allowing people to, as is done, for example, now in Oakland and some other cities, to provide their own shelter. That is to say, not arrest them for forming a community of tents, let's say, when they have no other options. And Fitzmaurice's response to this was to demand we leave his offices, even though they were public. The public has a right to go to the offices during the office hours. And we weren't in the middle of his private office. We were in the outside waiting area. And we said, no, we're going to wait here, and we're here not just to see you, but to see all the rest of the council members who have, this is the access point where we meet the city council and the community, supposedly our community reps. So what he did was he began compiling a legal case against us, claiming we were harassing his secretary, Anna Brooks, who's still, I think she's still secretary, though she may be on vacation now. Anna is a woman that was highly sensitive, I guess you might say. I would say even to a fault, because she got upset by having that we were in the offices. She didn't like it, and we were somewhat outspoken. You know, when council members came through, and if they were ignoring us, we would try to talk to them. We weren't, you know, we didn't disrupt the peace or anything. That would have been a crime, and they could have then arrested us. And they would have had their way and gotten us removed. But we simply stayed, and we made it a point to continue to stay and continue to invite people outside with coffee in the morning, and it went on for a couple of weeks. But what we decided to do when we learned that they were claiming that we were engaging in some kind of criminal activity, we began to record everything that we did so that there could be no question later that everything we said, and at least everything we said, we didn't have video recording, we had audio, was, okay, above board. And eventually the city got an injunction against us being there, which we had thrown out, but it took us 6 months to throw out the injunction. And as a part of that whole lengthy process, this Fitzmaurice also produced a series of rules that are still in, at least they're still posted, and it's not too clear if they're enforced, which stated that you were not allowed to record any personnel of the offices, either of the city or at the police department. So clearly this new law, which says you can record a cop in a public place, and a police station that is open to the public is a public place, has been thrown out. But I, of course, regarded this entire thing as preposterous and a violation of the First Amendment, which says, you know, you have a right to freedom of the speech, the press, and the right to assemble, includes the right to record, which was what you're doing, as to document what you're doing, provided you're not obstructing business in some way or intimidating someone else or, you know, trying to blackmail somebody or something, that engaging as you know, part of a crime. And so what this means is that it may mean this new law should give heart to people who want to realize that the statements of a city, the statements of a city council member, the statements of a police department, the little posted rules you see, when that may be, go for such places as the Homeless Lack of Services Center, which is not a public place, but has a whole bunch of rules posted, some of which I ignored when I was there. Specifically, the demand, I discussed this in the last few shows or a show or two back, when they told me to leave, I said, no, you had opened this up to the public for the homeless memorial. I'm not going to leave until I'm finished with my business here. But there is an increasing attempt to bully people, I think, and you're going to find more of this under the Chase, that's our mayor, Cynthia Chase, and Trump administration, because there is increased police power that has been given to police departments both throughout the country and our local police department and the Parks and Rec Rangers that you find prowling Pacific Avenue and harassing homeless people and driving them out from under the eaves of the city council roof at night, where homeless people try to find sanctuary from the rain when, you know, the warming center is full and the I don't want to go into the problems of the Association of Faith Communities. Winter shelter program, I have to some extent a little bit talked about that. But so that's why I'm glad that there is a clarification that, at least as far as I know, that this law was passed that specifies cops can be audioed throughout California. It's not illegal. And I believe, I suspect that extends to any city official. Now, I know that police departments have a tendency to ignore the law until they're forced to follow, at least some police departments and some laws. So, for example, Wes White over in Salinas will be throwing a homeless shindig for all you folks who want to go over there and celebrate a year's anniversary of the Salinas Union of the Homeless. That's going to be happening Monday, Martin Luther King Day, 10 to 1. Give me a call if this interests you, 423-4833. That's the home line for me and also the number for HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, if you're interested in going to this Martin Luther King Day celebration in Salinas, where there'll be people speaking about homeless civil rights from various jurisdictions. I think Food Not Bombs activists are going to be speaking, and Monterey County activist, I think Becky Johnson, formerly of Santa Cruz, now of, I guess she's in Seaside now, will be speaking too. I'll be speaking. But anyway, Wes White was told by the Salinas Police Department that they would not allow him to use his cell phone to take pictures of the citation records. He had to copy everything out by hand. Just like I think we were told in the police department when we were in there that we could not video. That was illegal for us to take video of what was going on. And we ignored it. Some of us did, and the police did nothing. But the fact that they lie and bully and attempt to persuade people that to shut down their right to document, which really is a form of empowering, is an important thing to resist and a dangerous thing that happens here in Santa Cruz and elsewhere. I'm running into similar problems trying to get public records from the city now, more so than ever, and it looks like it may require some strong legal action to do that, and I may have found somebody willing to back that up. So we'll see if we can get the, I've asked for records of where the police placed their surveillance devices in town, provided they're not actively investigating. Talk about the regular surveillance devices, like the one that you see in the police station or you see outside the city council offices. And I'm assuming that we're talking about the little globes that are hanging. You could find several of them right next to the city council chambers. And I've requested since May that the city document show us their public documents on when they were installed, who gets to look at the video, how long the video is kept, how much did it cost, how much does it continue to cost, if there's a maintenance charge. And I've gotten complete stonewalling from the city on documents that they are required by law to share. And the real question is, the district, I suppose I should go to Jeff Rozelle and try to get him to prosecute the city officials. That's maybe what I'll try. Of course, I don't expect it would work, but it's, I think, relevant to document a trail of trying to use existing so-called solutions, that pathways that are supposed to be there, and to show that you have to do other things to get this done. You have to expose it in other ways. The city is also refusing to turn over records around such issues as arrest records and citation records of people that it's giving tickets for such things as sleeping at night or being in a park after dark. And the reason this is important is to show the huge amount of wasted resources that are being used to do this and the extent of the repression that is happening, affecting the health and safety of a whole bunch of people who I suppose some in Santa Cruz would like to consider clutter or trash or bums or scum or punks, skunks, and drunks, whatever. But these are people, and they're being treated like vermin, if you will, like rats, like debris and trash. And to document it, I think, is a really important thing, with the intention that eventually groups like tenants and students and union activists and elderly and disabled and minorities of different kinds will realize that scrambling for a piece of the pie isn't quite enough. What people have to do is get together and demand a whole new pie, a whole new deal. The police department and the parks and rec enforcement get huge amounts of money, or in terms of, they get more than 50% of the budget, I believe. In the city, that which is, what, 80 million, something like that. Anyway, I'm going to pause and take one of my famous musical breaks and wait for your flood of incoming phone calls, 427-3772, and perhaps we can, I don't know, we can hear some other voices than my raggedy-taggedy voice here. Let's see if we can get that. Why not?
Unemployed, Reaganomics, free market debt, Nicaragua, the troops are sent, another generation oppressed, ignored. Lives cut short, dreams deferred.
With politics off and no trust and choice, another flame flared up from the silence voice. Crack hit the ghettos around 83. It was money on the streets of poverty, and it spread like a disease. Tore the heart out of the communities when Nancy Reagan said, just say no. Another white lie was good to go. They poisoned a generation, protected profit for corporations. Who are the players? Who is the boss? Selling arms to Iran at inflated costs. Was it the Neoplanton and Ricky Ross? George Bush Sr. and Oliver North from the sketchbooks of the CIA. The gun sales of the South LA. They brought cocaine from Nicaragua. They brought cocaine from Nicaragua. They brought cocaine from Nicaragua. Used the profit to train the Contras. From Nixon up through Reagan, upholding a culture of racism with housing segregation, spatial deconcentration. So black and white, this game they play. Three strikes are out, that's the final say. Cops rounded folks up like overseers, put them back to work as prisoners. Now for crack it's 5 years, maybe solitude, 10 more if you take an attitude. 5 months probation if you're a coked up white, set the bar real high, you can pay the price. Now the prisons are private, it's a business move to put those idle hands to use. Through state corporate contracts, prison labor brought slavery back. Who are the players? Who is the boss? Selling arms to Iran at inflated costs. Was it the Neoplanton and Ricky Ross? George Bush Sr. and Oliver North from the sketchbooks of the CIA. The gun sales of the South LA. They brought cocaine from Nicaragua. They brought cocaine from Nicaragua. They brought cocaine from Nicaragua. Used the profit to train the Contras.
And that was Ryan Harvey, Poison Generation. It was uploaded 6 years ago, actually 6.5 years ago. And it's interesting, the references it makes have only become fashionable recently, the idea that the prison industry is essentially the new slavery for African Americans. That became fashionable with Michelle Alexander's book. I don't know if it's fashionable. It became more mainstream an idea. But a lot of these ideas of, or realizations or realities have been sung about by radicals for a long time. And I'm glad they are, and I'll keep playing them. You're tuned to the stream of Free Radio at freakradio.org, freakradio.org. And the call-in number here is 427-3772, 427-3772. I am going to actually be getting back to Berkeley at some point, probably on Sunday. I'm going to go up to Berkeley probably tomorrow and pick up the latest issue of the homeless newspaper Street Spirit, which you can pick up at the Sub Rosa Cafe, or if you see me around town. I'm a bearded character with a car plastered with bumper stickers. So this is a newspaper that can be sold by homeless people and by anybody, actually, who's poor. And you can use the money for whatever you want. You usually sell it for a buck a copy. First They Came for the Homeless is a group up in Berkeley, as regular listeners probably know, that has been fighting the anti-homeless laws by actually living outside very visibly, and when the police come and demand they move or start seizing their property, they simply move to another place, set it up again, often having to replace the property stolen from the community. They get the community support to set up again, and this has happened at least 12 or 13 times. I think they've said 15 times. They're issuing T-shirts now that have a sort of a listing of each place they've been driven away from, and the dates it happened. I'm hoping to get a T-shirt or two when I'm up there, if there are any such. And I've said for years that it seems to me that that's really one of the few credible strategies I see for getting homeless civil rights, the basic right to survive in a community, ratified by, accepted or tolerated, if you will, by the politicians that be. That's how it happened in Portland with Dignity Village. And that's kind of how it's happening in Berkeley, and that's how it's happening in Oakland. Oakland communities are now set up under the freeway, and they're actually being supported with trash pickups. And I don't know if they put in porta potties down there, but things are heading in that direction. And it's the excuse used by liberal politicians here in Santa Cruz, for example, Mike Rotkin, is who's not no longer in power anymore, but he was once. And I suppose I haven't heard it used by the Chase Terrasas Matthews Council at the moment, but it's a frequent story that camping is too good for them. They need housing. Housing is what they need, and certainly true that a housing option is a great thing. But talk about housing is not housing at all. Talk about shelter has nothing to do with real shelter. And talk about restoring people's rights, as Chris Krohn has done at some length in his recent campaigns, is not about really restoring rights. I actually spoke with Krohn. He had a Tuesday constituent meeting, which was open to the public, and good for him. That was something that he said he was going to do when he was on the show here a couple weeks ago, and he did it. And I acknowledged that was a commitment kept. I asked him to make a couple of other commitments and keep them. Couldn't get him to do it, although I got lots of flowery talk and reassurance and kind of glad-handing and pats on the back and stuff like that. You know, Chris is good at that stuff, and, you know, he's an amicable character. For example, I asked him to make sure that the consent agenda at the city council was something that was restored to public access. Right now, you cannot talk on individual consent agenda items as you can at the supervisors and you used to be able to do at city council. And Krohn said that he would consider any requests that people want to talk on consent agenda items, and he would consider it on an individual basis. But of course, that's what is currently the policy, that anybody who wants to talk on an item, which this consent agenda makes up the majority of items at city council, anybody who wants to do it has to get an okay from a city council member, and the council member has to pull the item off. The member of the public cannot, which is not the standard previously and is not the standard at the supervisors, as I said. And the point is to get Krohn to agree to pull off items without some sort of prior agreement or do-si-do with a council member, and he won't. Or at least so far he has refused to do that. So as far as the last city council meeting went, I didn't go to it. I got a report from Steve Plaich, who spoke with me about it yesterday. He said he was there. In fact, I reviewed it a little bit by tape. It was mostly all about taxi cabs and the sanctuary zone proposal. A lot of folks came out and said we need to protect our immigrants from Trumpist-type activity. Of course, there was no such rising of the people to protect immigrants from Obama-ish activities, where there were 2 million immigrants deported over the course of his 8-year reign. But after all, he was a Democrat, so I guess that means they're the good guys, right? So we don't have to worry about them. But I mean, you know, it's certainly right on that people are concerned about the racist horseshit of Trump and his continuation and escalation of repressive Obama policies. But the real issue are the policies, not the Trump administration. That's the problem with all the latest brouhaha that's going on and the ballyhoo about Trump and so forth, is that unless we attack these policies at the root, we'll find ourselves shoulder to shoulder with Democrats who just want to get back into power and continue the same wars that they were denouncing when Bush was in power. In fact, escalate them. Continue the same attacks on whistleblowers that when Bush was in power. And, in fact, escalate them, because that's what Obama did. So it's important to go after the issue and not get lost in the party politics. And so, anyway, the city council wasn't much there that I would comment on. It was a kind of a, I thought it would be the shortest agenda ever because there are only two substantive business items in the afternoon and no evening session. And usually there are numerous business items. And it was also a very short consent agenda, too. But apparently it went on until past around 6 o'clock, according to Steve Plaich. So I guess no news there. Sorry, folks, nothing exciting to report. First they came for the homeless that I was talking about earlier. I hope to get more information, maybe some direct interviews for Sunday. We'll see. They have been threatened again with a 24-hour notice to move. I think that was a couple days ago. And I didn't see this morning that they were yet ousted, but the city has shown no hesitation in driving them away. City administrator, actually the city manager, is a woman who was appointed homeless czar. So I guess this, of course, was in directly after she had shown she didn't mind constantly arresting, seizing the property of, and driving away this first they came for the homeless encampment. And you may recall on the last show we talked with Dan McMullen. He had some differences, rather strong differences, with some of the first that came for the homeless activists. But the City Council of Berkeley, like the City Council of Santa Cruz, has shown no interest except in the most sort of abstract way. I guess that's better than the Santa Cruz City Council, in addressing the fact that homeless people are forming their own encampments. And they have to be allowed to do so and supported in doing so unless there are real alternatives that are set up. And after those alternatives are set up, then you can talk about service-resistant people and, I don't know, pressing people to get into housing or criticizing them for being outside in tents. Until that happens, it's just simply so much bigotry, so much NIMBYism, so much xenophobia, fear of the stranger that you're peddling, and you're doing so under a more fashionable liberal labels about, oh, we only care what's best for them. We don't want them to be outside in tents. We want them to be in shelters, and so we have to eliminate their tent cities, and then they'll go into the shelters or wherever they may be. And in fact, what is being done in Berkeley, according to Dan McMullen, as it's being done in Santa Cruz, according to Andy Carcello when he was on our show, is the social service agencies, the poverty pimps, those who are being paid supposedly to provide services for homeless people, are actually sending homeless people away rather than to other cities. And so they're essentially gentrifying the community and getting rid of them. You might say, well, they're either finding them a home somewhere else or shelters somewhere else. Usually, though, the shelters that they're sending them to are places that aren't homes. You can't be there during the day. You can't store your stuff there during the day. And so it's simply a form of homeless removal under another name. Now, I got an email from Rose than Raylan Butcher. You may remember her. She's activist up in Roseville with the homeless up there. And she sent me this email, I guess it was yesterday morning. Flooded homeless in Marysville, California. It's Marysville, sorry, not Roseville. Sad to say, but the last and only encampment of the homeless in Marysville has flooded. Water rose so fast, no one could get their belongings or their pets. They were given a 48-hour notice of floodwaters, so everyone lost everything they had. Now, with only a Red Cross shelter at the local community college, which is being shut down today, the 14th Forward and the Rescue Mission, the 14th Forward and the Rescue Mission are the only places for my people to go Some decided to stay on top of the levee to stop anyone going into the jungle to loot. There was 15 people that had to be rescued from an island within the middle of the jungle. Roughly 125 people were displaced in a matter of 12 hours in the immediate area. The count is still rising as the homeless in some areas had no warning. Some had to swim to safety. As of last night, the water was still high and will continue to rise. The Oroville Dam and Bullard's Bar are planning another release from dams. The water is filling the dams as fast as it comes in, it's going out, which is flooding in both Yuba and Sutter County. Yuba City homeless encampment is flooded as well. Myself and Brian took supplies to the homeless that stayed on top of the levee out of our own pocket with no help from an agency. Lack of services. Myself, saddened with what happened, it shouldn't have happened like it did. People feel that no better way to get us out but to flood us out. As of this morning, it's been 4 days that people's pets have been hanging in the trees and are still trapped on islands. The attempt made to rescue any animals are, and some of this is sort of fragmentary, a few homeless going to find their pets with no help from any emergency response. Today, some homeless are getting a team together in boats to go tree to tree and try to get cats from trees and dogs straight on islands. I'll keep you updated. Any advice would be gratefully appreciated. Thank you from the one worried mayor of the homeless, and she's the sort of self-appointed mayor of the homeless in Marysville, California. And I may try to reach her by phone to see if we can get an update from her. In fact, let me try and do that now and see if we can get some more news on what's happening. So don't go away. While I'm doing that, let me grace you with another song here.
A lady came up to my bedside. I was lying there dying in pain. Don't recall she asked permission. I don't recall she asked my name. I was just lying there dying away. Couldn't speak or move, but I could see this was a gal with a mission who was gonna start singing at me. Well, I knew that I was a goner. I only had moments to spare. But I like to choose my own music. I'm dying, but trust me, I care. She asked me if I had been baptized. She asked me if I had been saved. I shook my head and she stood by my bed. She told me how I was depraved. Please go away when I'm dying. Please don't start singing a song. Please don't sing stuff by my bedside. I didn't do anything wrong. It ain't my fault your life's sinking, but this ain't no really big show. I can't get up or I'd poke out of here. Shut up and just let me go. I don't mind songs about Jesus. Gospel goes down pretty well, but the last thing you want when you're dying is to be told you're going to hell, or a bucket of baptism water pouring all over me. I don't mind being cursed, but I can tell you what's worse is this big lady singing off key. Singing a song. Please don't sing stuff by my bedside. I didn't do anything wrong. It ain't my fault you like singing, but this ain't no really big show. I can't get up or I'd look out of here. signal to send off for help for someone. Call all the doctors and nurses, or somebody get you a gun. But there's nothing they do when it's over. Wish you well and good luck and so long. Tell the last doc to padlock the hospital door before some gal starts singing a song. Please go away when I'm dying. Please don't start singing a song. Please don't sing stuff by my bedside. I didn't do anything wrong. It ain't my fault you like singing, but this ain't no really big show. I can't get up or I'd book out of here. Shut up and just let me go. Shut up and just let me go.
And that was Shut Up and Just Let Me Go by Carol Denny from her album Because We Upon This Earth Are One. So I'm on the line now with Raylan Butcher of Marysville, California. Hello, Raylan.
Hello, Robert.
So I understand, are you still above water? What's going on up there?
Yeah, still flooded. Everybody pretty much went to the top of the levee, and they were taken to the Yuba College here in Marysville for a Red Cross put a shelter up there. As of today, I haven't gotten a word. They were going to shut it down today, but I think they're still letting it go. Got people at the rescue mission and also at 14 Forward. It's the tiny houses.
Let me ask you, Raylan. Let me ask you, how many people are impacted by this who are outside? How many people were in the jungle, and how many people have been displaced?
Roughly about 127 people or so. There was 15 had to be rescued from the water, and it's all bad up here. It's all bad.
Did anyone die, or is anyone hospitalized because of this?
Well, we have at least two missing that were possibly have drowned. They're still searching for them with no luck as of today.
Now, you mentioned that you got a 48-hour warning. Does that mean 48 hours ago you knew this was coming? Or?
Yes. The local police came in, and that was about 48 hours before the water really hit us. I mean, it was already to the banks. And they came in and was telling people to leave. And then they came back, and it was 24 hours, and less than 12 hours we were flooded. And there was at least 15 people. That one guy was hanging from a tree on the tree limb, emerged in the water, and it's all bad. It's just bad. It just saddens me that this happened like this, because I believe that the county should have been in there helping these people out way before 48 hours.
Now, was there any flooding elsewhere in, you know, the Marysville area where the authorities helped people out?
There was in the Yuba City. We call it the Mosquito Beach area. There's roughly probably over 200 people over there. And apparently they just got up and they were out of there, left all their belongings behind. They hardly had any time either. Because where they are is where the Yuba and the Feather Rivers meet, and the Yuba River was pushing water so hard, it was pushing it back up into where the slough is, and that's where the other people were at. So, yeah, it pretty much flooded all the homeless here in Yuba and Feather area.
I guess my question, though, Raylan, is, was there any, emergency for people who were in houses? Were any of them flooded out? And if they were, did they get any kind of assistance from, you know, the authorities?
No, I don't think any houses as of yet, no.
It's
the homeless.
I got you. So why, were homeless people, were they, should we say, encouraged to come to these rather dangerous areas? Or was it something that, you know, were you and others chose because you felt it was a good option for other reasons? Why did homeless people choose to come to areas that were likely to be flooded out?
Well, basically, there was two encampments that were just destroyed by the county and code enforcement. And those people they moved all to one spot. We had no place, they had no place other than the jungle to go to after they were booted out of, just their stuff destroyed from the other encamps. So they went to the jungle, and that's the only place that they were allowing the homeless to stay at, the county and the city.
And what happened to people
for
who
a
did,
minute.
What happened to people who didn't go to the jungle, Arielin? I mean, in other words, were they arrested?
They pretty much stayed in the alley. Buildings in town.
Well, no, what I'm saying is, you're saying the county forced people to go to the jungle. Did they take
pretty much?
Did they sanction? Did they give any kind of penalties to people who didn't go to the jungle?
Pretty much, they told them that they had services, of course, and that was no lack of services at all, because these people are just like I don't know, they're just. But the people that did go to the jungle were the ones, I mean, they took them over there like a band of gypsies with no license, no registrations on their vehicles, and they escorted them, the police did, to the jungle from the other encampments. And pretty much these people didn't have nowhere to go. I mean, they just destroyed their houses and took them to the jungle, and now they're flooded out. I mean, these people are in shock up here.
Now, were there any people who refused to go to the jungle and who went, let's say, to other places? And if there were, did they get punished by the police for doing that?
No, they kind of, like, snuck back into where they were living. And now there's, like, two I know that went to jail for trespassing, okay? And they just... You know, they're just trying to find anywhere to sleep in town, anywhere out of the weather they can get. That's what they're doing.
I mean, you catch my point. The point of my question is, could people have just said to the police, well, this looks like a dangerous place. It's close to the, you know, to a flooded area that was like, that may or may,
okay,
you know, we're going to go somewhere else. And did anybody do that? And if they had, there must be some homeless people, as you were saying, who didn't go to the jungle, went elsewhere. Did they get particularly singled out by police, or were they ignored?
They were pretty much ignored. Anybody that didn't want to go to the jungle, they, like I said, hit the alleys, the buildings in town, the police, and they're just harassing them anywhere and everywhere that they are. And now there's no homeless down there. I mean, it's pretty much, there's a lot of them that didn't go to the shelters, and they're walking around town.
And is there less harassment for people who went to the jungle for the last month, let's say?
I don't understand what now.
Well, in other words, if you went to the jungle, were you less likely to be harassed than, let's say, if you went somewhere else when they destroyed those other two encampments?
Pretty much, I'm going. What do you think? Yeah, pretty much. They were like, go there, you'll be okay, you know. And these people knew that this was going to happen. And a lot of my people, as I call them, the homeless, they have already, you know, I get phone calls 24/7, something's going on. And like, I keep calling the homeless project manager, which is Kaya. I keep calling her and saying, hey, this is what's going on, and this is what these people need. And I tell her, and then it's like, she doesn't do what she's really supposed to be doing. And that's her job, is to take care of these people. And like, I took it out of my own pocket just the other night and took down a hot stew and whatever else, blankets, dry clothes I could, to these people that are still on the levee that have not left. And it's been how many nights now? Three, four nights now that these people have been up on the levee, and they're not leaving. The railroads tried to run them off. The police are just like, okay, they're not messing with them, because see, they haven't left, so they can go back in. But the rest of the homeless that left, they're telling them that they can't go back. So, and I mean, all of their belongings are there. Their animals are hanging in the trees. It's terrible. It's terrible. So, I don't know. We're at a standstill up here, and we sure could use some legal help up here or something. So hopefully, I don't know, I'm just I'm so saddened by this.
So no local public defenders or other groups that step forward to try to help out. That's what you're saying.
I think he got maybe some help today or what. I think Brian, because he's filing against him up here, he's been working diligently on it, and he possibly found some legal help, we're hoping. And then once we track this a little bit, I think the others are going to step up, because they're just like in so much shock right now. They're like at the mission and at the Scorching Forward at the college, and it's like they're going, what do we do? And I know you guys just sit still for a minute, and I'm going to dig in and do some research. So they're kind of depending on us to really try to get something going. And we're gonna push it, because I'm not giving up on these people. I mean, I'm only one person. Brian's only one, but we're not giving up.
So people are being blocked from going to pick up their belongings and their survival gear and such?
Yes, they have none. They have no survival gear. They were giving 48 hours. It went to 24. They came back. And in less than 12 hours, they were running to the levee and swimming. They were 15 people had to be rescued from like a little island in the middle of the jungle. And a couple of people were, there was one guy was hanging from a tree, submerged in the water. And like I said, we've still got two people that are missing and were possible drowning.
Now, does this...
Yeah, they're cutting us. The churches have been cut off of giving us blankets and tents or any type of survival gear at all.
What do you mean the churches have been cut
anything,
off?
Yeah, anything to do with camping, they have been cut off.
What does that mean?
A blanket.
What do you mean, Raylan, when you say the churches have been cut off? Do you mean... You know that what there's a sign that says we've been told we can't give you anything, or we're going to be arrested if we do, or what does that mean?
The quiet law, that's what they call it. That if you give these people a blanket or a tent, then you'll have to pay the consequences, pretty much, what's going on.
And what are the consequences?
I guess they'd try to shut them down somehow. I'm not sure. Nobody's really... A couple people have like snuck them out the side door with a blanket, you know what I mean? And now the people that go and hang out at Walmart trying to get an extra dollar or two, they're probably going to cut them off, start harassing them. Walmart has really been a great help to the homeless, and every once in a while you'll see an employee inside the store will buy a couple blankets and go out and give them to the homeless. And I seen one guy getting harassed for doing that. Where'd you get those? He goes, I bought them with my own money. And the officer asked him, he says, oh, well, what are you doing? He says, I'm giving it to these people. He says, why?
So let me understand, Raylan, what's going on here. Let's suppose, I mean, you say that the churches are being stopped from giving blankets. Does this mean police officers are tearing blankets away from church members, or they're standing in the doorway blocking people from getting blankets? Or, I mean, what exactly, how does this translate into real situation?
They're working on banning blankets up here, tents, any type of camping gear, unless you buy it yourself from the store.
I didn't put that very well, because I got the wrong mic on here. But how are the police actually interdicting this? How are the police stopping this from happening? Are they coming up to homeless people and telling them you can't go to the church? Are they coming up to the churches and saying, we won't let you do this? Are they standing in the doorways and stopping people from going into the churches?
Pretty much they'll see them on the street, and they're now starting to take their camping gear, anything that has to do with camping. And this is only certain police officers that I think are doing this, and I don't think they have. I don't think they're actually supposed to be doing that, but they are.
And when is the last time?
It's all bad.
When's the last time you heard of a police officer taking any survival gear from a homeless person?
It was the second day after the flood, which is now 4 or 5 days now since we flooded out up here. Yeah, and Red Cross only opened the Yuba College because there's showers and you know, a place to cook and stuff there. But they haven't even, not even Red Cross has went out to see if there's people, which there is. There's probably, what, 12 people that are up on the levee that are not leaving, and they're like under just a tarp or and maybe a blanket or something. And then, you know, they're just not, Red Cross isn't even doing what they really should be doing.
How far above the waterline are these folks under the tarp?
About how far are they from the water to the top of the levee?
Probably about 200 feet.
No, from the top.
So the levee to the water down. Yeah, because the levee's about 70 feet.
Yeah, there's where we are in the, where we flooded out. It's probably about, what, 10, 15 feet of water right now still. Yeah, 10 to 12 feet or so of water right now. And then the levee is to the top of the levee from that. How many? Yeah, the levee's about 70 feet tall. So, and they're about, you know, what, about 50 or so feet from the top, I guess.
What's the weather prediction for the next few days for you folks?
It's supposed to be pretty nice, but that's down here. And if it's nice up there on the hill where the snow is, then we're going to have more problems down here. So, because we're looking at another 22 inches of water coming off of that mountain within the next couple of days.
Even because of the melting snowpack?
Yes, yes, exactly. And if another 22 inches comes down off of that hill, that's going to keep it flooded. I mean, we were told that it could possibly go levee to levee here, and that would just cover all of the river bottoms where everybody's in at.
Now, would any of this impact people of a higher income who have houses?
No. See, the levee goes all the way around Marysville and Yuba City, and the rivers meet, and it's levee to levee, levee all the way around Marysville. You have to go over a body of water to get into Marysville at all. They call it the bowl. So if the levee was to break and hit the bowl, it would definitely fill up, and it would be just a total disaster.
So, again, would this impact anybody in houses?
Yes, yes, the whole town.
And so how concerned
the levee was,
how concerned is the town about this for its own safety?
Some people I know have already left town because they're not sure what's going on. And like I've even asked the city hall, do you even have any an emergency for your people to get out of town in one quick swoop? And they never did answer me. They wouldn't answer me.
Well, Raylynn,
yeah,
let me
fire drill. Do you have a fire drill? They wouldn't even answer me.
Let me get you,
let
me get you to sum up here because I'm going to roll on you. Any message you want to put out to people who are, we aren't broadcasting by radio, but we are broadcasting on the internet right now. So I know that you were also considering having an event that was coming up, probably flooded out, and that you were talking about trying to write a story for the Street Spirit newspaper in Oakland, and maybe contact homeless activists in other cities. Has any of that come to pass?
I would like to try to get hold of some people, have some people maybe possibly get hold of me if they have any suggestions, any ideas, anything that will help us up here, because we're at just no ends right now, and it's like everybody's in shock, and we need help up here. We honestly do.
I gotcha. Well, best I've got for you right now, and it isn't very good, obviously, is just an opportunity to say what you said on the radio. I'll be coming back again on Sunday. You're welcome to call in and have updates. You might want to have some people, if they want to talk about their experiences on the radio.
I
guess
the
flood.
Sure, I can find a handful.
The flood did the dirty work of the authorities. It looks like so now they're.
Yeah.
But again,
so
I guess
now they're all happy. They're all happy, I'm sure, because it's like their work's done. You know. And
well,
like
still, people got to find
what they did.
People
got
to find a place to go, and so they're gonna go somewhere. So that's I don't think anything has really been resolved. But, if there was a community, it sounds like a community has been broken up, and that doesn't sound good.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Brian.
Brian and I aren't giving up, and if anybody out there has any suggestions, ideas, or any way to help us.
Sounds good. And how should people reach you, Raylynn?
They can email me, ethean.rb@gmail.com.
And in case you didn't get that email, give me a call at 423-4833, and I will give you Raylan's email. Thanks, and thanks to Brian, and stay above water.
Yeah. And thank you very much, Robert. And thank you for the people
that
are listening. Thank you.
Bye-bye. And that's the story from Marysville. Doesn't sound good. Let's turn to a few voices from Santa Cruz. This is from the Red Church of 3 days ago at Calvary Episcopal at the 6 o'clock meal where I wandered in.
Talking with
Dreamcatcher.
I'm here at the Red Church, and it's the 9th of November. No, January.
Yeah, the Rangers took my shove and threw it in the back of the truck and drove off with it.
What stuff?
All my survival gear and my way that I make my living in my trailer. Because I was up getting my EBT card, you know, at the M-Line office. So I have my stuff neatly parked out here in front in the park, which is open till 10. And they just said, you know, this is unattended, and they just nothing spread out, no nothing. And they brutally handled my stuff. I have witnesses. You know, if they don't know the difference between shit and Shinola.
They don't.
You know what? I was so mad that if I see that buck, I'm going to tear him a new asshole.
Do we know the name of the ranger who did this?
He's called Fat Buck.
Fat Fuck, I see. Now, when did this happen?
And that's all I'm going to say to his face from this point on.
When did this happen?
This happened Thursday. You know, I've been in the rain and wet since frickin' Thursday.
Okay. This happened on Thursday last week.
Yeah.
Where did it happen?
In front of City Hall.
And about what time of day?
I was there until the afternoon, and when I was coming home that evening after getting my card, it's an all-day process. You know, I'm getting the news that everything got snatched up from City Hall. I didn't even look. You know, I need some help here from somebody. Now, if I'm a tow truck driver and I see his car parked someplace, I'm going, hey, whose car is this parked here? And if someone doesn't answer to that call, I can put it on my tow truck. I mean, that's kind of like almost.
Kind of, yeah.
That's almost like the same thing. If they don't know the difference between a guy that, like, doesn't cause any problems, have they ever walked up on me and had a problem? Never.
You are all debris to be removed.
There was no debris. My stuff isn't debris.
No, of course it isn't. That's the point, though. But
yeah.
They see it all as debris.
I don't know what they see. I don't think they can see anything at all. That's my problem. That's their problem.
No,
and there's going to be, I'm going to get some support here because I'm telling the damn truth about this. You know what? If they don't know that I'm not a bum compared to, like, I don't know what they're trying to get rid of.
Good. I'll be right back for that. Like a hefty meal here today. Chicken rice, tuna, looks like meatballs. Here's a salad.
Yeah.
Liberally dosed with salad dressing, of course.
I don't have any tea, so I can't.
Thank you. For sure. Before you go, what happened at the Freedom Sleepout last week? I understand there was people driven into the rain.
Yeah. We were all quiet and everything, and they just came anyway and pushed everybody in the rain, and then we all went to our other boho motel locations, and I don't think there was any problems. We all just did what we were supposed to do, you know. But the warming center, there was so much disruption by drunk guys that snored really loudly and peed all over the place that it was really, I couldn't get a night's sleep last night in the warming center. I mean, Brett's trying really hard, but you know, he sure did stay busy with two guys that just kept peeing their pants. That's not fair.
And we'll be open again tonight or tomorrow night?
I don't know, but I need to be there because I'm out in the cold until tomorrow.
Will you be there tomorrow?
I don't know where I'll be. I'll have my own stuff if they give me it in the morning. Now, sometimes they play games with me at the release. I try to do everything right.
The Tuesday police release.
Oh, my God. I hope I can get my stuff because, man, You know, I wouldn't be in the way. I just roll away. I know where to go. I know how to stay invisible. And I clean up everywhere I go.
Can I get you a knife and fork, perhaps?
I got one. Sounds good.
Thank you, man. We've been talking with
Dream Catcher.
Thank you, sir.
And Dream Catcher is a guy we've often interviewed who, again, he tries to... he believes that if he's only reasonable with the police department, they'll be reasonable with him. And the problem is, in a society where a particular class of people has no rights, and you're completely dependent upon the goodwill of a group of armed law enforcers who are essentially doing the wishes of another class of people that has no real emotional connection whatsoever with those people who are outside, other than regarding them as pests or increasingly a menace, a nuisance at best, then you have a situation where you're really creating a fantasy about, it's a fantasy that you may need to use in order to survive from day to day the belief that somehow there's some order in things. If only you behave in a certain way, you'll be treated properly, or you're better than the rest of these other people who are, they're peeing in their pants, or they're, they're shouting and you're being reasonable, and therefore you're going to get treated better. Unfortunately, rational considerations don't enter in when you're dealing with a kind of a juggernaut, with an infernal machine, with a system of essentially people who believe they are Ubermenschen, that they are a superior class, that they have the rights that others do not have, or at least that those who are outside don't have the rights of ordinary human beings. There are no rights to which the society owes them any respect. And that's the mythology, that's the toxic, fascistic mythology that has spread throughout Santa Cruz, and that I've spent a lot of time denouncing and resisting. And it's a little saddening to see people like Brent who are, trying to establish some services for some people. And he not only set up a warming center, but he's out there at 2 in the morning trying to bring people into the warming center. But there are so few spaces. And two, in terms of its impact on the entire homeless community, it's so limited that, again, it's based on the notion that if only you present sort of a reasonable approach to things, then things have got to get better. Unfortunately, I think we see that this is not true. It's not that you shouldn't be reasonable. It's that you need much more than that. Some more from the Red Church.
Talking to the security threat, what's your name, Ms.?
Julie Shaw.
Julie, you say that Santa, Mierda, or the Daily Dump website has a special eyes out for you?
Not for me, but they said that they have, they wrote an article about Salvation Army has a shelter there now, and apparently the people who are being picked up and transported to certain shelters, maybe over at a veteran center over in the mid, like Live Oak area.
Yes, and at the Salvation Army boat.
And it used to be over by River Street, the pickup, and now it's been changed to the Salvation Army.
A little better.
And this individual, because it's closer to, a lot of people don't have to go too far with all the traffic and everything, they can get hit. It's very dangerous crossing that highway. Anyway, so this person, who's anonymous, writes that they're going to have lots of eyes watching the Salvation Army.
Will they be providing cups of coffee for the poor?
I hope they do.
Probably not.
I'm not sure, but that'd be a great, big, giant Army truck.
They'll be throwing cups of coffee at you.
Are you talking about the Santa Muerte people?
Yes.
Whatever they're called?
Yes.
Okay. Old Saint.
And Julie, who runs a website concerned with the rights of RVs called Santa Cruz Full Timers, is talking about the Santa Mierda website. Holy shit is sort of the translation. You can get it at santamierda.com. It's a sort of a neo-fascist website. Regarding homeless people, anyway, that features a thing called the Weekly Dump, which has a series of articles. And political commentary. I'm kind of looking at one of their articles, but let's hear some more from Julie.
Puerto, I don't know. What they're doing is they're going to have lots of eyes watching, they said, for any kind of behavioral issues. And you call it the decorum police, right? Okay, so she's got this decorum militia. And I guess apparently they're going to be watching.
Well, they're going to keep you guys in line, man. I mean,
oh,
come
my
on.
Goodness.
Shape up.
Wow, so is that like
a
Zimmerman?
Look at this guy. He's got an umbrella. This could be a dangerous weapon.
Is that like a Zimmerman thing, or what is it?
I don't know.
Is this a power trip? Is this the last time somebody told me that they have lots of eyes and ears around Santa Cruz? They tried to choke me, and then the police came and took pictures of my neck. So when we have people who are hyper,
they arrest the choker.
He was told to leave by his attorney, so he went to the islands for a while, and then the assistant DA got mad at me because I didn't press charges against this individual. I was in my younger 20s. I'm my 50s now.
Here in Santa Cruz.
Correct. Yeah. So anyway, whenever somebody says I have lots of eyes and ears, I usually kind of is a red flag to me that that individual might be hostile and aggressive. That's just my own personal experience. So anyway, I was alarmed when I read that, and so I...
And you would come to the Salinas Martin Luther King Day, repeal the laws against the homeless rally, but you are, in fact, limited in funding and dog sitting.
Yes, we have dogs, and I have a lot of responsibilities in town. If I had a sponsor, though, that could make it available for me to go, I would be more than happy to go and take my family with me to show support and solidarity with those individuals. And also, it would be a learning experience for my children, and I hope more homeschoolers and teachers and educators get involved with the plight of the homeless and the poor and the needy in Santa Cruz and beyond, because it's an educational opportunity that I think should not be ignored.
So if you do find the dog sitter, let me know.
Oh, a dog sitter. Oh, that'd be phenomenal.
Or a dog walker, as the case may be.
Yeah, good luck.
Dog watcher, many eyes and ears.
Yeah, I had
watching.
To put the dogs in a kennel, I think. One time we let somebody watch the dogs ran away.
Great. We've been talking with
Julie Shaw, Santa Cruz full-timer. Thank you.
Thanks, Julie.
And the website, again, the Santa Mirada website for the daily dump, or sorry, the weekly dump for January 6th says this story. Salvation Army begins winter shelter program near downtown. The Salvation Army and Laurel started operating as a winter shelter for the homeless beginning on January 1st. I have a bunch of friends who live within blocks of the building and are obviously concerned about the fallout from the program. When I say fallout, I mean literally people falling out of the shelter in the morning and into the surrounding neighborhoods for the day. So I've got a number of eyes watching this new location closely. We'll report any bad behavior to me, which, of course, I'll pass along here. I'll reserve my personal judgment here until I get some feedback on it. And then he says, perhaps acknowledging the winter weather. As I said before, I'm against people freezing to death from exposure. Again, I don't know if this is a man or a woman writing. And as I said it before, the county and its city rep on the board of supervisors, that should be Ryan Coonerty, I suppose, should be ashamed at the half-assed county effort here. The county has plenty of empty public buildings it could use. It left up to the local churches and the Salvation Army to deal with the problem, with the Homeless Services Center given the dubious responsibility of managing the money after they actually refused to actually manage the program. The first RFP from the county had zero proposals. The second one had one single proposal, a slap-together group that wasn't even a 501c3, and that's the Association of Faith Communities that's currently running the shelter program. But hell, that's good enough for the county. They'll make it work. Maybe that's enough to tell you the county shouldn't outsource this and just run the program under county health services. So I got to say, my initial reaction to Santa Mierda writer, as I called him, is sort of neo-fascist stuff. But this, it sounds like even though he has some severe prejudices against, I think, unhoused people generally, he is sort of pulling in his fangs in the winter because he has some concerns, and properly so, and good for him, about winter people freezing, and he also has perhaps some telling criticisms about the county's refusal to open up vacant buildings, and for that matter, I would say the city's refusal to do that. Although I suspect that some of this is part of the Rochelle Naroyan strategy of shifting all the responsibility to the county and saying, oh, well, we don't have to change the sleeping ban because it's really the county's problem in not providing facilities for homeless people. But in fact, it's the city that is criminalizing homeless people mostly, although city deputy, county deputies do their share of that as well. So, a little more, and then it's from the cream to the dregs from Uncle Dennis, who should be coming into the studio shortly.
A flash from
James.
And James, you say that your tenancy on the cold side of the Salvation Army doors has, should we say, been ended?
As a matter of fact, by the homeless.
Tell me what happened.
Well, the homeless winter shelter program is now taking residency inside, and they need 24/7 access to the double doors.
Could you move towards the window? Or
I was prepared to do that, but they're now okay, we've got to have ambulances coming through here.
What
all
about the
time.
Back? A little next to the woodshed, perhaps.
Right. Yeah, there's another.
No, we don't want you hanging around the property.
Right.
There's a liability issue.
Because we have homeless people here.
And there are people in the neighborhood who might complain.
That there's homeless people.